nothing really matters when you look up into outer space. It's a great big world and there's no need to cry.
I had to start. I want to start the show with that song now. I had to figure out how to get it on the. Hello, everybody. Hello, hello. So excited to have you on. That's one of my favorite, our family's favorite songs. Cheer up, because really, the world's a big place, and it is. It's a good place. I'm excited to be here. It's Jennifer Lamprey, and this is I Love My Body Diet Radio Show. We are going to get going today with. I just love this woman that is going to be on, is on right now. Her name is Melody Ward. She is actually an alumni. I met her through the I Love My Body Diet program, and she went through it. And she is going to share some of her experiences. And she really, I mean, she's gone through some pretty amazing trials in her life and has come out conqueror and is an amazing wife and mother and friend and just really has such a wonderful heart-centered, is just a heart-centered person. And that's why I'm very attracted to this woman and who she is and what she does. And so we are so grateful for her to be on today. And you can hear her rooster in the background.
Hi.
Hi, Melody. We heard your rooster first.
Oh, did you hear my rooster?
Oh, yeah, totally. Just heard your rooster. Love it. Because you have, I just
let all the chickens out to kind of roam the property just a few minutes ago. And I think, yeah, one of the roosters brought his little group of girls out right outside my bedroom window. So,
oh my gosh. I love it. Well, you're going to have to tell us a little bit about that too. So just tell us something. I mean, really, I'm going to be, you know, I'll be bugging you and asking you questions. I hope that's okay. Because I just think your life is so fascinating. I it's almost like I can live through proxy. Through your life with what you have going on, you know, I mean, really though, it's so cool. I love it. I love what you've done. And so tell us, first of all, just tell us a little bit about you, Melody. And then, we'll just be chatting, talking about what's been going on with you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to kind of give a broad overview here. I was born and raised on the Central Coast in California, up in San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles area. My family is pretty much still centered in California, in that area, with a few stragglers elsewhere. But I have two younger brothers. My parents divorced when I was a senior in high school. We moved across the country from California to Florida when I was starting high school, which was fairly traumatic. And then to have the divorce happen was fairly traumatic. And from that point, my mom kind of delved into alcoholism. And she spent quite a few years just in a very dark place, making a lot of really horrible choices. She's now 6.5 years sober, which is fabulous.
Great.
Yes. To have my mother back. Like, I can't even say that I really had her growing up because she was just kind of keeping anxiety and loneliness and she was, you know, they call them dry drunks. And so that's kind of what she was. She wasn't drinking, but she was behaving very much like an alcoholic my whole childhood. So to have her sober now is wonderful. I graduated from Florida State University. I have a degree in religion. And which is an interesting way to go.
I didn't
for,
know that.
Yes.
How cool.
Yes, I did. I was raised in the church and always knew that I wanted to do something that was kind of, helping people ministry related. And I got my undergrad in religion. And it was very wonderful to learn about not only my own religion, but world religions from various perspectives. It was quite fabulous. My husband and I met at a leadership training in Bellingham, Washington. I came from Florida State. He came from Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. We met in Bellingham, Washington, and fell in love and wrote letters for about a year before we got married. Yeah, we've been married
awesome.
16 and a half years now. We have 6 children. 4 biological, 2 adopted. We came to be adoptive parents because after my second child, my daughter Maggie, we had 3 miscarriages right in a row. And it was a really horrifically sad time in our life where we didn't know where we were headed. We knew we wanted a large family, and felt very confused by all the losses that we had had in a row after having two successful pregnancies, and then all of a sudden, boom, everybody kept dying in me. So decided to become foster parents. My husband was not super open to the idea of adoption. He said, you know, let's do foster care and see what it feels like to have somebody else's kid in our house. And he was, the minute our first adopted son, Ian, crossed the threshold of our house at 7 weeks old and 8 weeks premature, Chuck was forever changed. And so, yeah, our two adopted guys are biological brothers. They were our foster sons first. Each came at their own birth, pretty much. And we had a biological right in between them. So we had three newborn little boys in 15 months.
Wow.
Which, it was insanity. It really was insanity. I look back now and think, how did I not have a complete nervous breakdown then?
Wow.
So, we were living in Ohio at the time. We'd moved there with my husband's job and decided to move closer to his family. His parents had retired down to northwest Arkansas. So he took a job in southeast Oklahoma, and we lived just over the border in Missouri. And we moved there May 1st, 2011. We had five children, and I was 20 and a half weeks pregnant with our sixth child.
Oh, my goodness.
And then May 22nd, an EF5 tornado decided to come through. We were completely inexperienced with that type of scenario. We heard the sirens go off. We went into our backyard and looked around, and the sky was sunny. And it was a little bit windy, but not anything we hadn't seen already in that area. And then the sirens stopped, and we thought, well, I guess that's it. You know, maybe it was just a scare. We went inside, and I was getting the kids in little boys in baths and trying to get onto the internet, and I couldn't log on. And I looked out the window down the street to our west, and there was just, it was just black. It was just this complete wall of black, and I called down to my husband, and as soon as I spoke his name, I heard him yell, "Crawl space, now!" We didn't have a basement. We didn't know how critically important a basement was in that neck of the woods. So he had already thrown three kids under the house into the crawl space. I was running downstairs with my pregnant belly and our youngest son, and he was waiting for me to get there. We were running through the kitchen when the lights went out. And he said, let's just go. We ran as quickly as we could to the garage. We did not make it into the crawl space. We just kind of hunkered down. The house ripped away, and I felt us being taken up with it. And I cannot go on a roller coaster to this day, because that feeling of when you kind of go over a bump, you know, and you kind of lift up out of your seat, that's what it felt like. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, is this how we're going to die? Is this what's going to happen? And I was trying to hold on to Caleb, our youngest son, and I didn't know where my husband was with our oldest son or where the other kids were. And I felt us being pulled up, and then suddenly we fell down. Where the furnace had been, there was about a four-foot hole, and we fell back into that. So it kind of pulled us along about 6 feet, and then we landed in this hole. I landed top half in, the bottom half of me was still on the concrete pad for the garage, and that's when part of the base of the house that was still there shifted and landed and broke my pelvis. And
oh my
I was trapped under there, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, this is my worst nightmare. And I just heard a voice saying to me, kick, 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 get free, get free. And so I don't even know how I did it with a broken pelvis, but I kicked and kicked and kicked until I fell into the hole. And flashes of lightning saw children, three of my other kids, one of them severely injured. He was just cut open. I could see his bones. And then two others were trapped under, and my oldest daughter, Maggie, is screaming, reaching out her arm to me, just screaming, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm dying, help me, help me, help me." And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't reach her. I couldn't get her out of there. I can't say that it lasted terribly long. I think it was probably 30 or 40 seconds. until it had passed over us, and we were able to kind of see that it was, everything was destroyed. It was a 13-mile long trek the tornado took, and about a mile wide. And we were able to, I tell you, God spoke to me very clearly the whole time afterwards. I was very calm. And my husband doesn't remember any of this. He kind of blacked out for it. He didn't have any injuries, but he doesn't remember anything during the tornado or just after.
Wow.
But I was able to, I just heard voices to say, get the car jack up this debris, get the kids out. And neighbors came over. We just met them at that moment. They came over to help get the kids unstuck, rush the kids to the triage point that had already been set up, like it was kind of the neighborhood, plan of here's where triage will be. If this building is standing, this is where we will all meet. And it was a really traumatic to the nth degree experience.
Oh my
gosh. To being new to a community, to not know anybody, to lose everything, to have injuries. I was on bed rest for 8 weeks after, and then I had just constant pain up until I received the spinal block for the C-section, because my pelvis was broken in a way where the baby was not coming through me, which was very different for me. I'm a home birthing mama, and so it was very different for me to go from that extreme to now here I am in the hospital getting ready for this surgery. But everything, it was just such a multi-layered trauma to lose everything, to have my children injured, to have myself injured, to have my husband have his own trauma that he wasn't able to put words to and really work through, and to be in a strange place where we didn't know anybody and didn't know anything. And it's been a very long process to work through that.
Wow.
But I found that it really has the losses of my babies and the journey through foster care, which is difficult. It is difficult to be a foster parent and to adopt through foster care. And then to move again and immediately have this trauma with the tornado really set me up for my work now with refugees. I first started working with refugees.
I have to stop you for a second, because you are saying a lot in about 5 minutes. Honestly.
Oh, I know. I talk so much, and I have so much to say.
I know, and I love it. That's why I was so excited to have you on. First of all, I just want to sit and just be really present to some of what you just shared. I mean, first of all, like you're talking about, you have your mother that you went through, so all of that, and then, like you said, the foster care. I actually would love to just talk about the foster care. Also, I mean, that experience you had with the tornado, and just even, I mean, like you said, there's multi layers of things that you went through. Let me ask you first with the tornado, and then I want to work backwards, because I think that also is going into your work. But I want to know, like, of that experience, what would you say would be the one thing that you really took out of that as far as your own learning? Like, what was one of the biggest learnings you think you had in that time?
I tell you, God really used that. I've always had to be the strong one in my family. I'm the only daughter. I'm the oldest of all the cousins in my entire family. And I'm the oldest amongst my siblings. My dad is, he's a unique bird. And he, hold on, guys, I'm on the phone. I'll be off in just a little bit, okay? Okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. We get it. We all have kids, most of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. My dad was not super present when I was growing up. I don't fault him for a lot of his kind of emotional neglect. I look at his childhood and I think, no wonder you were screwed up as a dad. But then with my mom being really inflexible and rigid and impenetrable emotionally, and she relied heavily on shame for her parenting, and our relationship is completely restored now. My mom has helped me so tremendously to work through so many things in my adult life in the last few years. So I don't want to, demonize her too much. because she has, you know, God has redeemed her life. It's fabulous now. But when I was a child, I was kind of the mother. I was the maternal one to my brothers. When my baby brother's Snoopy doll, the ear ripped off, I sewed it back on. He cried for Sissy. I carried him. I made the meals. I did a lot. I had to be the strong one. My dad had me. My dad went through a bout where he had something going on with his eyes, and he was blind for a while. And so I was driving him to his college classes. I was driving him to church. I was driving my brothers around to all of their things that they needed to do. I was doing the grocery shopping, and all of this was, you know, in high school.
Wow.
So I've always had to be the strong one. And I've prided myself in my strength. And my God has gifted me with an intense amount of energy. And I love that about myself. I love that that I can take a licking and keep on ticking with a smile on my face and with, you know, with a joke ready. That's just kind of the way God made me. But it was my source of my sole source of value was in what I could provide others in my strength. With the miscarriages, I had zero control over that. My body, which had done so many good, awesome things, was now broken and kept, like, for a long time, it felt like it kept killing babies who were in me. And then to, we, you know, foster care had its own deal, but then moving and having the tornado and having the injuries in the tornado, I was completely helpless. I had to rely on people for everything. Even in the hospital, after the tornado, I had to rely on nurses to come in, bring me a bedpan so that I could pee. So there was nothing that I could do on my own for a very long time. I couldn't take care of my kids. I couldn't get through to my husband. I couldn't even control my own thoughts after the tornado. So it was really about breaking, like it broke down all these false structures I had built around myself. And I kept trying to like get up in my own strength and kept collapsing again and kept, developed some destructive habits that really were destructive not only to me but to my family. And it just had to get to the point where I said, I can't do anything. Everything that I thought that I was, I am not. And I had to strip away everything, belief that I had about my own strength and how I could do everything through my own strength instead of through the strength of God. And it was a complete stripping down of everything I believed. I'd grown up with a very strong belief of if you follow God, you will have protection. Where was my protection? I'd spent my whole life following God, giving my time, giving my energy, giving my money. And so why did my babies die? And why did my children get injured? And why did I get injured in this tornado and lose everything? So it was really a stripping down of everything. And then a finding out, okay, who am I? Who is God? What do I believe? Where is my strength coming from? So I can look back at it now, and I can look at it all, even though when I was going through it, it was the worst thing I could ever imagine. And I would not wish that whole experience on my worst enemy. But I can look back at it now and say it was good. It was good to go through all that because of where I am now. And that's it's a weird place to be, to say that all of these traumas were good. But they really were. Because it stripped away lies to reveal the truth of who I am. You know, and then going through the I Love My Body Diet process, the 3 months that I got to do the program was really further helped develop that I don't want to hide from my ugliness. I don't want to hide from my areas of weakness. I don't want to hate myself because of those anymore. I want to embrace those and move forward. But I think really the number one thing, long story longer, the number one thing I took away from the tornado is I found my true strength, and that is in God. I got rid of lies and found truth.
Well, and I love what you're talking about, Melody. I think, and I just actually put another little thing on Facebook, and I'll be passing this around your because really, I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, and I could actually get really emotional, and I'm holding back because, first of all, just knowing you over the last month, but hearing you talk this way in this kind of compact environment that we're doing right now on the show. I'm hearing who you are. And it's like, I mean, your life, what an example to all of us. I mean, truly, Melody. And I know you get that. And I know you must feel that inside. But I was just thinking, some of the words that I wrote down were hope. I mean, really, just the hope. And then, like you said, strength to be able to really understand. Because I think that God wants us to know our own strength. I think he wants us to understand that we are strong, that we are a powerful beings. But really, to be able to depend and know, and that's where this process, it sounds like you've really been able to edify both areas of your life, where you go from strength, you know God's strength, you know that you're nothing without him, and then you also know that you are so much, that you are just so much as this individual, beautiful, worthy daughter of his. And I'm loving what you're talking about. So to me, what I'm hearing from what you're talking in the last 20 minutes is strength and hope, like just this example of such strength. And I do believe that we have, don't you believe that we have these certain values, these certain aspects of ourselves that besides just for ourselves, but as we give this to others, we become this real light of that specific thing or a couple of these different things. You know, I just was thinking again about, I always have her little Mother Teresa's, her essential wisdom. I have little books of Mother Teresa. And I can't help but think about you and being, you know, really dedicating. I mean, it sounds like maybe before this life, or I don't know what happened, but it almost feels like before this life, you agreed to give this, your life, to so many different areas and to help support and serve others. And so I want to get into what you now have, what you, like you said, your calling in life and what you've been so called, you know, felt so inspired to do with the refugees. Do you mind talking a little bit about that now? Love to hear.
Oh,
it.
Sure. I love talking about refugee care. It's one of my favorite topics ever. Uh-huh. I first worked with refugees when we lived in Chicago. After we got married, my husband still had another year of college. So I moved up there with him, and I worked with an organization called Exodus World Service, and they mobilized the church and the community at large to welcome refugees, newly arriving refugees. And a refugee is anyone across the world who has to leave their home because of a well-founded fear of persecution. And that's usually based on their race, their religion, belonging to a particular people group, their political opinions, their gender a lot of times. And you have to cross a border to be considered a refugee. A refugee is a legal status. If you are in your home country and have to leave your home but stay within your own country, you are considered an internally displaced person, but a refugee crosses the border of their home country into another country because it's not safe for them to stay. And refugees, it's a long, long, arduous journey filled with trauma as a refugee. It's the trauma starts, you know, in their home country as they are experiencing the persecution. A lot of the refugees we see coming in have physical scars on their bodies from the persecution that they have received. We have people who have bullet wounds. One man shared his story of how the People's Liberation Army was trying to cut off his leg, and he has very large scars on his leg below his knee from where they were trying to cut off his leg. So they have intense trauma beforehand. They leave their country a lot of times with a moment's notice. A lot of times there isn't all this time to plan to say, okay, we're going to need to leave, let's pack a bag. A lot of times it's, oh my gosh, they're rolling into our village, we got to run now. So they arrive into the new country, they're in refugee camps. The average amount of time in a refugee camp is 15 years. And in the refugee camp, we have families coming in who have been there for decades. When I was working in Chicago in 2001, we still saw Vietnamese families coming in, which meant they spent multiple decades in refugee camps before resettling. There are 19 million refugees worldwide. One half of 1% gets resettled each year. So a very tiny number. And there aren't very many countries who do resettlement. There's the United States, Canada, Australia, Sweden, and then a handful of others accept just a few. The U.S. has the largest resettlement program. This year we're going to be receiving 85,000 refugees from all over the globe. The president sets the number each year, the first week of October. It's called the Presidential Determination. It's one of the only programs where the president actually sets the numbers himself. He decides which regions we accept from and how many from each region. So we just received that number earlier this month. It's up. Last year was 70,000. This year is 80,000. And we've been promised, and I do promise with air quotes because, you know, you never know what a politician what a promise really means. So, so we've been promised 100,000 would be accepted next year. Refugees, when they arrive, a lot of them don't have a large amount of English skills. They, some of them do. Some do. I'm not going to say all have zero English. Some do have some English. But their lives have been such that they are really not set up for huge amounts of immediate success in the United States. In the camp, there are no jobs. There are very limited. There's very limited schooling. There isn't. There aren't any habits of being somewhere at a certain time that are created in the camps. They're told when they will receive food, what food they will receive, if there's electricity in camps. They don't have access to the switches. The lights come on automatically and turn off automatically. There's not a lot of freedom. In Thailand, if they leave camps, they're shot by the Thai army. They are considered illegal in that country, and they are confined to the refugee camps. So this means a lot of the, you can go online and go to the UNHCR, that's the United Nations Higher Council on Refugees. They have pictures of camps. They kind of run the whole camp scenes. Camps are really rustic. In Thailand, they're bamboo huts with dirt floors. In Africa, they are metal and wood buildings with dirt floors. There's no running water, flushing toilets, no stoves or things like that. So everything that, I mean, it's a huge amount of learning for refugees to come here. And you have not only physical traumas and emotional traumas, but little English skills and no way of knowing how to function in this society. So I feel like my past experiences have really set me up for success in this career. My job here in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, my job with the resettlement agency is I handle the volunteer and outreach program. So I mobilize the community to welcome refugees and to come alongside refugees to provide success, to help set them up for success in their new life. And this is really, really important that refugees have somebody come alongside of them. When I was injured, when I couldn't do anything for myself, it was area of people who, like, somebody worked with my husband and their church wanted to help. So they provided meals. I didn't have to cook for like 8 weeks afterwards. I didn't have to prepare anything for my children. And that was really key in letting me have the space that I needed and the safe space that I needed to let my mind heal and let my body heal. Refugees need that as well. When they arrive here, they have not only the trauma that they experienced in their home country, but the trauma of decades in a camp. And now the trauma of being in this new country where they're expected to sign lease papers within 24 hours. They come with debt. When refugees receive a loan for their airplane for their air travel, so they have to pay that travel loan back. It's an interest-free loan, and they have a long time to pay that back. And 85% of all refugees pay back their loan, which I keep wanting to look up student loan numbers to see.
Yeah, seriously.
To see, you know, how that compares. They have to sign a lease within 24 hours in a language they don't understand. And then immediately they start into this Americanized system, medical system, benefit system, education system, and in a language they don't understand in a land that is very cold. Here in Minnesota, we primarily see Burmese refugees. They're called Karen. They're the second largest people group in Burma, and they've been persecuted since 1948, about 1948, by the Burmese government. And we also see Somali. So we have people groups who are coming from very, very hot and warm and muggy cultures to Minnesota, which has very, very cold
wow.
climate. We're on a freeze warning tonight, so it's going to be a cold night for
oh
refugees
my goodness.
Arriving tonight. Yes, so it's a very traumatic experience to be in resettlement. And just like it was so traumatic for us to be in this land we didn't know, and after the tornado we were living in a home that wasn't ours, with furniture that we didn't pick out, clothes that were given to us, towels that were given to us, dishes that were given to us, food that was prepared for us. And it was such a great help to have those things, but it was also really disconcerting to have that as well, because I felt like my life is not my own. And I don't know what I'm doing here right now. I don't know how to orient myself and how to figure out how to stand on my own two feet again, literally for me. And figuratively, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to share. Well, the thing is the foundation. I mean, as you're talking, you just feel the foundation is literally taken from under you in so
yeah.
many different ways. And so for these people to come, and how, again, Melody, how amazing that you have been through that experience as you're talking, and to really be able to not only give these people the strength to let them borrow that strength that you've created and have been blessed with, but to also let them know that, because again, I can't imagine, I mean, to have your life completely rocked like that. I mean, I'm talking about these refugees, also you, but to have that support, like you said, so that's a really big piece of this, right? Is the support and
yes.
the love and the connection
oh, yes.
that you're giving them.
Yes. Yes. Well, think about any time you move or you go through a trauma, you have friends who you lean on, and they really kind of carry you. Like we talk a lot in I Love My Body Diet about
mm-hmm.
holding space. And that's really kind of what I'm mobilizing people to do, is to hold space for refugees, to say, I'm here, I've got your back, we're going to do this together, and I'm going to help you figure this out. And it's so beneficial to the refugee families, because we all go through times in our lives where we need help, and it's not easy to receive help. For me, it's not, at least, easy mm. to receive help. And especially, when you're in a situation where you may not speak the language, it's super uncomfortable, for the refugees to be like, I'm in this totally complete strange land, and now these white-skinned people are here, to help me, and I don't
right.
know what the heck is happening here,
I mean, it's actually amazing. So let me ask you, just to kind of to close it up just for the next couple of minutes, I would love to know, I mean, really, what, because this is something you can pass around this link actually to anybody you want that may even be, looking to help and support. So to talk to them or even any of us of what we can do, really what we could do, what would you say to us? And what are you asking people to do to support? And what do we have
for refugees?
For refugees, and what you're attempting to do, even with, I don't know where these centers are that you, like you're working in. Are there centers all over the nation? I mean, is that what's happening?
They're mainly centered in larger cities.
Okay.
I don't know if there are any in Salt Lake. I can post some links.
I'm actually I'm in San Diego, so there may be some.
Yeah,
but it'd be nice to know.
Yeah, San Diego will be receiving a lot of the Syrians. San Diego has a large Syrian population, so it tends to be wherever there's a large population, that's where the refugees will go.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the best way for them to receive support also, is for them to be plugged into a community, of their nationality. So, yes, San Diego will be receiving Syrians. Find a resettlement agency. They're called resettlement agencies. Sometimes they're called VOLAGs, V-O-L-A-G, stands for Voluntary Organization. UNHCR will have lists. The Department of State has lists of all the refugee agencies in the country. Ways to help refugees are to plug into a resettlement agency, to volunteer, to be a mentor to a refugee, to help in any other way that they have. A lot of times they need help with bus training. or with transportation to appointments, or they need a winter jacket. If you have a winter jacket, or, you know, in California it would be summer clothes.
Yeah,
anything you can do to extend a hand to them and to say, we're glad that you are here. How can I help you? If you live far away, donate to a resettlement agency. The UNHCR has ways listed on their website of how you can help specifically the Syrian refugees, because I know that's been in the news a lot. And it will probably be several more years until the Syrians start arriving. It's about a 3-year process for all the background checks and health screenings. It's they go through 17 background checks before they set foot in the United States. So it's a really intensive interview and background check and health screening program before they come into the United States. You can advocate for refugees, write your legislators asking that more be allowed or more funding be provided towards refugees. You can write letters of support to your local newspapers. You can, just find ways of donating time or energy or money to refugees. I have at my office, and not at my office today, but I have I can post a link on the I Love My Body Diet Facebook page of 25 ways to support refugees. And it's a great list. It's everything from advocating to donating to everything in between. So I can make sure that I post
as well. Send me a message with that, and then I'll post a link on it, because when you post it, it'll go onto the site of the beauty and health page. And so I'll post that, and I can attach it to in Twitter and Instagram and everything. Actually, would be really great along with this.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be so great. Well, Melody, is there any last, because really, I feel like this is such an inspiring, and I want everybody to hear this. I really do, because this is really, to me, what your life, your example of your life and what you're doing and stepping into. And I know also you have a farm, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have just a small farm. It's just 6 acres in Minnesota. We have grapevines and asparagus and strawberries and chickens. I love chickens. I'm probably a crazy chicken lady. We started with a dozen a couple years ago, and now we're up to about 75. And
We
do several rounds of meat birds each summer and butcher those ourselves. And
wow.
We're just burgeoning homesteaders.
Don't you have a Facebook page?
I have a Facebook page for our farm. It's called The Muddy Hen.
The Muddy Hen. Oh, yeah, I love it.
The Muddy Hen, yes,
because
I'm also a hobby potter, and so I'm in the mud, and then I love chickens. So it just kind of pulled my two worlds together.
Oh, my gosh. You guys, seriously, if you don't know Melody, you have to get to know her. I'm not even kidding you. Whoever's listening to this and will be listening to the replay, you just have to get to know Melody. Just what you hear here is just who this woman is. And you are an example of life, just how to live life, how to live it to the fullest, you know, I know that you struggle with things too. I get it. And you just keep showing up and doing what you're doing. And so is there anything last?
Yeah.
Last
you
got to
keep
get
getting
off?
Up. Yeah, I just want to encourage everyone that if you have difficult things that you're going through right now, or that they've been in your past and you're working through them, just believe and know that there is good that can come out of all of them. It sounds trite, and it's no comfort when you're in the middle of it, but know that it is coming. The good is coming, and your struggles will be a great benefit to others, and it will be a great benefit to yourself as well. As you get through it and as you heal through it, I can promise you that you may not feel God as you're going through your difficult things right now, but once you get through the heart of it, you'll look back and you'll see God everywhere in it. You'll see His hand and His love and His grace through every single step of it. And it will cause such a dramatic shift in you that you'll just want to do everything you can to help everybody see, look, it's going to be okay. It really is. It's going to be okay.
I love it. Well, I so appreciate you, and I'm actually going to change some of the description on here and share some of these things. And even what you talked about. I can't share the link right now with that, but I'll put in the UNHCR, you said, is a place where you can go if you want to find out a little bit more about how to support the refugees and even some, right? Is that, and that'll give you a list. And so I'll put that in.
Yes, today, I won't be in my office again until Monday, but today I can find some of those, the exact links, and I'll message those to you so you can put the exact links up there.
Thank you. Let me, anyway, so I'm just so grateful for that. I'm going to put that in there and we'll update it. And I thank you, Melody. I love you so much. You're such an amazing woman.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
It was so fun. And seriously, I hope you'll get the link. I'll send it to you. And just, I hope you pass this around and let people know this really is just a beautiful space of who you are and what you're doing. And I know it'll inspire people. Maybe people that didn't even know. I didn't know all this about the refugee resettlement. I didn't know. I know you shared a little bit, but this call really does, this show is helping me really see what it's doing and to hear you talk. So love you. And thank you. Yes. It's very, very inspirational. Just so appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
So anyway, check out the Muddy Hen, her Facebook page group, her Facebook page. It is so fun. You're going to love it. It's such an awesome energy on there. And it gets you really earthy. Get right into nature. You feel nature. I love it. I love your page. I'm going to actually pass it around with this too. So thank you for being on the call. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we appreciate you. Just remember to love yourself, love your body, know you are worth it. And truly that you can do it today. You can do what you need to do today. And life is a beautiful, beautiful experience. And so that's all I have to say. We'll have a show on Monday. Beth Banny will be on. Have a wonderful weekend. Love you guys. Let's do a little why not.
Cause nothing really matters when you look up into outer space.
Bye, everyone.